Hello, this is Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek. Welcome to another edition of Wine Tales, where we profile the people, places, and stories of West Coast wine country. I'm joined today by Mark Barringer, who has just recently joined to become the winemaker at Artesa Vineyards and Winery. Welcome, Mark, to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Mark, we understand that you're a fifth generation winemaker, and it's interesting when we talk to a number of winemakers in California wine country, there seems to be a long generation. You're a fifth generation. I think you hold a record so far from the winemakers we've talked to. Was there a pressure to become a winemaker?
You know, actually, there was no pressure. It's just one of those things that when you're living in an area like this that's so dominated by one industry, you kind of end up falling into it at some point. But, originally I was going to be a music major in college and was going down the path of becoming a professional musician.
And then when did you decide that you were going to give up the instruments for the vineyards?
Well, I guess I had a moment where I was viewing colleges and trying to decide where I wanted to go to school, and I did have a scholarship opportunity to play in a symphony at Cal State Northridge at the time, and I think I just kind of came to the conclusion that I didn't want to be a professional musician and spend my whole life living that lifestyle, and was realizing that leaving the Napa Valley, the place that I grew up in and love so much, that it really wasn't where I wanted to go. So I wanted to stay closer to home, and the wine industry seemed like the natural place to establish myself.
That seems to be a common pattern, the idea that someone is born in that area and then realizes after maybe traveling the world or seeing other things that the Napa wine area is really beautiful. Speaking of sort of the romanticized sort of myths and everything around winemaking, now you sort of probably didn't have many of those since you were born into a family that had a lot of winemaking, but what do you think are some of the misconceptions that are formed by those that aren't in the winemaking business?
Well, I think it is kind of funny when people talk about the romance side of the wine industry, because we kind of don't see it so much in our area when we've kind of been in it all of our lives. It's, you know, pretty much the industry we know from the time we were born. But I think where the romance really comes into it is where people fall in love with the ideas and the concepts of wine when they're enjoying it with a meal or with some friends. And I think that's what really builds in the romance side. It's the people enjoying it, enjoying the products of our labor.
What parts of winemaking do you enjoy the most, and does any of it sort of relate to some of the things that you fell in love with when you thought you were going to be a musician in any way?
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. I always tie a lot of similarities between music and winemaking, as well as cooking, which is another one of the things I enjoy doing. There's somewhat of a rewarding sense of satisfaction when you produce something like a wine, or when you prepare a nice meal, or even when you perform music. I think it's something that brings some sort of, it emotes people. It brings out kind of different feelings, and it brings a level of satisfaction to people that you're actually very rewarded by that. When I produce a wine that people really love and I get a lot of feedback about, it's very rewarding for me.
So before joining Artesa, you spent quite a number of years in some other wineries, including the Glen Allen Winery, as well as the Duckhorn Winery. And recently, I think during the Obama, the inaugural parties, Duckhorn wine was served. Was that some of the wines that you had responsibility for?
Well, I believe they served the 2007 Sauvignon Blanc, which I did not make. I left there in 2006. But it was certainly a style of wine that I helped to create over the years there. And the other wine that they served was the Goldeneye Pinot Noir, which was from our Pinot Noir facility that was located up in Anderson Valley. Mm-hmm. And that's made by Zach Rasmussen, who's the winemaker for that project. But I was definitely involved in those projects over the years in helping develop the style and the type of wines that we wanted to create there.
Now, what was the difference in the wineries between Glen Allen and Duckhorn, and what did you find sort of different about those wineries? And from the months that you've been at Artesa, how can you characterize Artesa as a winery?
Well, going back to the Glen Allen days, that was nearly 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. When they were still a pretty new company. They were about 10 years old at the time. But they were growing like crazy. It was a very large company. It was family-owned, which was always a nice aspect to it. But it was all about logistics. I learned a lot about managing volumes of wine through and trying to maintain a high level of quality all the way through the process. Later on, that came in handy when I got to Duckhorn, because Duckhorn was a really small winery when I got there. It was about 15 employees, and we grew it to over 120 employees by the time I left. You know, basically expanding out into two new wineries, two new brands, with more winemakers at the helm. And that experience from Glen Ellen became just invaluable in being able to grow that company at Duckhorn to the level we were able to and maintain the quality so high at the same time. Arriving here at Artesa, there's a lot of similarities too, in that, once again, it's a family-owned business. Many people don't realize that Artesa is owned by the Cordenu Group out of Spain, and they're one of the largest producers of sparkling wine in the world. And the family has been in the business for nearly 500 years, and certainly making cava for the last 200 or so years, about the same time my family got into the business back in the 1860s. So it's been quite a similarity in that type of management. I like family-owned companies. I think they have a certain pride and a certain motivation to make great products.
One thing I, you know, that struck me about Artesa, just visiting the winery in Napa, was that there's a broad range of varietals that are grown and the different types of wines that are produced. Are you, you know, what's your direction as winemaker in that? Are you going to be expanding into other varietals? Are you going to be focusing on some? What sort of style or what sort of management are you, do you envision going forward with Artesa wines?
Artesa is really known for the Carneros appellation, which we're in. And that area is known primarily for the Burgundian style wines, Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And that's really what we want to, you know, hang our hat on here, is to make great Pinot Noir and Chardonnay from this appellation. But Artesa also owns some spectacular properties in other areas. We have some vineyards up on the Atlas Peak appellation that produce great Bordeaux varieties, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Cabernet Franc. We also have a property up near Cloverdale in Sonoma County up in the Alexander Valley that produces some great Bordeaux varieties. And so we're looking at launching some new brands there to make some of the Bordeaux-style varieties outside of the Artesa name. We've been making a Cabernet under Artesa, but going forward, we really want Artesa to mean Carneros, and we really want it to mean Pinot and Chardonnay. So we're looking to develop some new brands to focus on the other varieties that we want to play with. And that's one of the reasons I think they've brought me in here, is to focus on those varieties with my experience at Duckhorn, working with Cabernets and Merlots, to kind of work into those areas.
I see. Now, you mentioned these other vineyards. Are they all estate-owned by Artesa or the Spanish family, or are some of it sort of that you have strategic relationships with some of these vineyards for sourcing of the fruit?
Well, the ones that I've mentioned are all estates, but we do buy some fruit from some outside growers as well. I think it's always the case that you can't own everything you want to. So there's certain grapes from certain areas and appellations that you just really want to work with that complete your blends and allow you to make a more complete wine. So we're always going to probably be buying 30, 40, sometimes 50% of our fruit from outside growers as well.
So, Mark, what are your favorite parts of the winemaking process? And I found that different wineries, the winemaker acts in different roles. So what parts of the winemaking are you responsible for, and what parts do you work with the rest of the team at Artesa on?
Well, my responsibilities include everything from the vineyards all the way through to the bottle. So it's really a complete picture of the whole process. And I think that's what I enjoy the most, is being able to see something go from, like right now we're going through bud break, and the vines are just starting to push and start to grow, and it's starting to get green out there. So it's kind of that first sign that, okay, the season's begun. And being able to follow that all the way through to seeing the cluster development, seeing the grapes actually turn color on the vine, and then going through the harvest and turning it into wine, and then all the way down the road, being able to sit down at a table and taste the components and put a blend together and be able to bottle it. It's just, you get to have that whole complete circle of events to be able to make the whole thing happen.
So with the Artesa brand, you were saying that you want that to focus mostly on what the Carneros region is known for and have these other sort of spin-off brands perhaps focused more on the Cabernets and the Merlots. Are you going to be looking to change the style of any of those wines as well, or to mainly just focus on the Cabernets and the Merlots?
I think every winemaker wants to put their own little mark on the wine. So there's going to be some little things that I'll be changing in order to put a little bit of influence into the wines. I have my own kind of style of winemaking, which I will be kind of bringing in here. And it's more of a philosophy than it is a style. It's just the way we like to do things. And I'm a very non-interventionist winemaking person. You know, I don't like to manipulate it too much. I like the wines to express themselves naturally. It's what we call terroir. It's the French term for soil, but it actually means a lot more than that. When you talk to a Frenchman, it's about the sun and the soil and the aspect and, you know, the amount of exposure the vine has, and that all those things, the way they're expressed in the wine, is what they call terroir. And we want the terroir to come forward naturally and not be covered up by a bunch of oak or some other level of manipulation that the winemaker has done. So we kind of take a very hands-off approach and try to do natural winemaking.
Based on the fact that you're a fifth-generation winemaker, there's obviously, it runs in your family. Is there any sort of friendly competition with the other winemakers of the Behringer family? Do you sit around and bring together your wines and try them out and have a little competition as to who's got the best wine of the season?
Well, that would be great if that was the case, but I'm actually the only one in the business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my family sold Behringer in 1971, and my father was an only child, and I was his only son. I have a sister who's in the wine business, but on the retail side. She runs a small wine shop up in St. Helena called the St. Helena Wine Center. So there really is nobody else in production, at least with the Behringer name. I do have some aunts and uncles that are in the wine business as well. I don't know if you're familiar with the Raymond Winery up
mm-hmm.
in St. Helena.
Yes.
Roy Raymond Sr. was the winemaker at Behringer back in the period right before the sale, and he had married into our family. He married my grandfather's sister. So the Raymonds carry on the Behringer tradition as well. And I spent about 5-6 vintages working with them when I first got out of high school, where I really learned how to clean tanks and work on bottling lines and all that fun stuff.
It's mm-hmm. Hard to keep track of all the different acquisitions and wineries in the area.
Yeah, there has been a lot of activity, especially right before the downturn in the economy. We had quite a bit of activity in Napa with consolidation occurring, where many of the wineries are owned by large groups.
No. Yes, it was interesting. The last time I visited Etude, I was also just researching on it and found out that it was now owned by an Australian company. So,
which is part of the Behringer Group as well.
So what are you busy with these days in Artesa?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, it's the beginning of the growing season, so the field work's getting quite active. We're just getting through the frost season. We've had some cold mornings and we've had to keep an eye on frost control and making sure that the vines aren't getting frostburn.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to look at what kind of crop we're going to be getting for this year. In the winery, we're doing more stuff around blending. This is the time of year when we sit down and look at the components and start to put them together and make the blends that will be the final products we put in the bottle. So it's kind of one of the fun parts of the business when we get to sit down and actually taste the wines. And I think it's the most creative side of the business when we get to actually start to piece these things together to create something that's more than the sum of the parts.
It's interesting when you mentioned sort of blending and tastings. I was just visiting Franciscan Winery recently and talking to Emily over there, and she was mentioning how, I asked her about trends in just the wines and, you know, the preferences that people have around wines, and I'm talking about how Chardonnays have in general become less oaky. Have you seen any other trends, or do you really taste for what you like, or are you sort of cognizant of, you know, different changing of tastes for California wines?
Yeah, we try to pay attention to what trends are going on out there, but it's very difficult to chase them because they will change quicker than you can actually catch up with them. You know, winemaking is a long process. It takes years to get a product to market sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where I feel like you just want to stick to your style and do it as best you can, because you also don't want to alienate your consumers who have been true to you over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's buying your product on a regular basis, it's because they have, you make a particular style that they like. And if you start changing it, you can end up alienating the customers that have been there for you. But you are seeing some trends where, yeah, there are less oaked Chardonnays coming out. And we're also seeing that the ripeness in red wines is starting to come down a little bit. I think we saw the envelope being pushed quite heavily into high alcohol wines with really rich ripeness. And I think we're starting to see it correct itself a little bit. It's getting much more balanced, I think, and the wines are more food friendly because of that.
So besides California wines, as a, you know, wine, probably wine lover yourself as well, what other regions do you have an affection for?
Well, of course, Europe. You know, a lot of areas around Europe is you know, what we kind of tie all of our winemaking back to. It's nice to know the history. And the areas that I like the most are around Alsace. I love Gewurztraminers and Rieslings from those areas, probably because we can't do that here. You know, that area is so unique in terms of its climate and soil and everything else that it's something we can't find in California or really anywhere else in the United States. And I also like the wines of Italy. For some reason, I think Italy is very similar to California. I think it's almost the California of Europe in a sense, the way they push the envelope technologically as well as stylistically to make some really creative wines that I find really fascinating.
It's interesting with Italian wines. They're very different style than the French wines, and it takes some getting used to as well. What do you do when you're not the winemaker at Artesa? What do you enjoy to do around the area?
Well, most of all, I like spending time with my family. I have three young daughters and my wife, and so I spend most of my time trying to entertain four women on the weekends and keeping things busy. But beyond that, I like to mountain bike. We have excellent mountain biking around this area. It's one of my favorite things to do, to go out and kind of clear my mind, get away from it all. And, in sports and things like that, I think are one of my favorite activities is watching college basketball. And when it's not that season, it's Formula One season now, so I like to enjoy, you know, watching a race now and then.
So when you're not hanging out shopping with the women, you're doing your sports.
Well, yeah, when you've got that many women around you, every once in a while you have to go to an adrenaline thing like Formula One to at least express your masculine side.
Anyways, I want to really thank you for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'll enjoy wines from Artesa come to fruition. I'm sure I'll be enjoying a couple of bottles of them as well.
I certainly hope so.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Happen every day. Those things in your life, they'll be